kaboom.
If you thought 4 hours a day, 1,200 minutes a week was enough, think again. He's the last remnants of the old republic, a sole bastion of fairness. He treats crackheads in the ghetto gutter the same as the rich pill poppers in the penthouse.
Wow.
The clearinghouse of hot takes break free for something special. The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller starts right now.
In the air, everywhere. We are back at it, starting the weekend. As we get going here with another full weekend, a Fifth Hour podcast, a very special cult group of the Maller Militia have found this podcast, and we thank you for that. And I am excited. We do this now 8 days a week, double barrel action on a Friday, and we had the overnight show, and now we go right in, sashay our way in to our conversation podcast. We do this because 4 hours a night, not enough. In the overnight, we thank you for finding it. We hope you've subscribed. Hit that little subscribe button on the podcast. And if you have not reviewed, I know it's a pain in the ass, but if you like the podcast, you should review the podcast. If you don't like the podcast, you probably shouldn't review it. It's not for you. But if you like the podcast, man, that would be great. 5 stars, review it, and that would be wonderful. And back, amazingly, another weekend with David Gascon, as he is in here. Hand sound effects. Gascon, the crowd's not actually here.
Nothing canned about that. Just got some people off the 405 freeway that wanted to come on in and say hello. So it's gonna be back in the house, and of course a brand new day. A little tired from having to put together a bunch of crap for you. I'm sure we'll get into that in the next day or two.
No. You didn't have to do any of that.
Tired. There's no high production tired. Value, like I, you know, like this podcast is. So moving right along, but yeah.
Wow, you are
what?
Pathetic.
I'm awesome. I'm fucking awesome.
That's not a word. That's not a word I would use. Yeah, that would not a fine. Word I would
it's
use.
Fine. You're not really kind. You're not really compatible with compliments. So it's
Here's what I do. All right. I believe in tough love.
Uh-huh.
Okay. That's what I do. I believe you get better. It's called constructive criticism. Is what it is.
No, you don't give anything constructive. You just criticize.
Now, if I was a doctor, would I be a dentist? Would I be a surgeon? No, I would be Dr. Truth. All right, that's what I am. Dr. Truth with valid and well-reasoned opinions.
Yeah, you'd be like an...
By the dozen.
You wouldn't be an ear doctor. You wouldn't be ear, nose, and throat. Maybe like an ophthalmologist. Because at times you are observant, other times you're not. You don't really listen to shit. You just talk loud over people. It's pretty much it. So you'd be an ophthalmologist. That's exactly
it's called being a talk show host. Have you ever heard a talk show host?
Have you ever heard
a talk show host who's I'm a talk show host. I would like you to listen.
We got some guys that are here like that, don't you think?
You want to name names?
No, but
no, I don't know. I don't listen to a lot of these guys, but if I have heard some people over the years that are like that,
like
and
who?
You know what I do? Click.
Like who?
Click. I move on. I go elsewhere. I don't listen. Why would I want to listen to that? Right? If I want to hear somebody whisper, I'll go to the library. I don't need to hear that on the radio or podcasting or it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So,
back to this podcast.
Yes, today's podcast. Now, this is what's known as alternative programming, right? Now, I'm excited to do this. We were supposed to do this interview last week. We've been working on this for a couple of weeks, but I think it's perfect because it's obviously NFL draft weekend and all that going on, that rigmarole. So I think we should give you an alternative, a little break from all that football stuff. And I am fired up because we have a legitimate big name. This guy, royalty in his day, back in his halcyon days with the Pittsburgh Pirates, as we are chatting with the great Dave Parker. Dave Parker, National League MVP. In 1978, was part of the We Are Family Pittsburgh Pirates of 1979. Played with Willie Stargell and was teammates with Pete Rose. Played with Canseco and McGuire. Robin Yount was his teammate, Hall of Famer with Milwaukee. Dave Winfield with the Angels. Won a couple of World Series. I mean, his resume is outstanding. And we're going to chat here with Dave Parker. He's got a new book out, Gascon. It's called Cobra, A Life of Baseball and Brotherhood. It just came out in April, beginning of April. So it's only been out for a short time. And if you're like me and you remember watching Dave Parker and the way he played with the bravado to his game, you're going to want to kind of read the book. I mean, he goes full in on everything here. We'll get into some of it just a little bit. We'll scratch the surface. But it's a book designed more for an adult audience, which is good. So he's going to tell some of them. I mean, this guy was part of the Pirates back when they were, you know, in the 70s and the 80s when, you know, cocaine was in the air everywhere and was in, you know, dragged into that. The Pittsburgh drug trials, which he was a star of. We'll ask him about that. By the way, before we get into the conversation with Dave Parker, if you're going to buy the book, I recommend going to DaveParker39Foundation.com. Because if you're going to buy the book anyway, you buy it there and it'll help the Dave Parker 39 Foundation in their mission to help defeat Parkinson's, which Dave has been battling here for the last handful of years. But let's get into it right now. And I think we should start with this, Dave Parker, that recently we've seen a number of players, former players, guys that you played with at the end of your career who no longer are watching baseball, who are disgusted with baseball. Gary Sheffield is one, and David Wells is another, just at the top of my head here. But where do you stand on that? Where are you at on watching baseball? Do you still enjoy the game? Do you still check it out?
Well, I'll watch it if I'm walking through the house and it happened to be on TV. But the game is too slow. They don't play small ball. Guys are standing at the plate taking third strikes, swinging at balls above their head. They're not fundamentally sound, and it's hard to watch.
Yeah, and I got to ask, as a guy that played, you know, in the, for me, the gold, I grew up watching you play, Dave, so I loved your era of baseball, but this ghost runner, right, where in extra innings, they just magically, a runner pops up on second base. Where are you on that?
Pretty soon, they're going to have robots pitching. You know, it's a weird thing. I'm losing the rules. I don't even know what the rules are in baseball no more. You got a guy running in, pinch running. You know, if I'd known I could pinch run, I'd have played an extra 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. If you were in charge, and Rob Manfred, you know, I do the overnight show here at Fox, and I've taken my shots at the commissioner, but if you were running baseball, Dave, and you could fix and tweak something in the sport of baseball, what would it be? What do you think baseball needs that the commissioner could do?
Well, they need to promote it better. They need to promote it better. You don't have any African Americans in the game. The percentage is like down in the sevens. They need to promote the game more. Bring some new blood in. And if it's broke, don't fix it. You know, ain't nothing wrong with baseball. You throw it, I catch it. You throw it, I hit it. You know, just keep it simple.
Yeah, Dave, and you were, you know, one of the great African American players in your day. But baseball's they've had these different campaigns to try to encourage more black kids to play baseball, but it seems like basketball and football for the last 20 or 30 years, everyone's been gravitating to that. So I don't know what else baseball can do. You know, it's an interesting dilemma, right? I mean, if kids don't want to play baseball, you can't really force them, right? So what are they supposed to do? It's an odd situation.
Well, you know, it's tough to force them to do it. But, I mean, you still got to promote it. You got to – basketball have all these programs for youth doing their all-star games, and they make it glamorous to the kids. Baseball could do the same thing. I'm not letting them off the hook with not forcing players to do it, just create an environment for them to want to do it.
Absolutely. Now, when you played, you had swagger. You had swagger to your game there. Were you frowned upon? I know today in baseball 2021, guys like Fernando Tatis Jr. who have that to their game, there's still people call them out on it. Like, you're not supposed to play baseball that way. When you were playing back in the 70s and the 80s and the into the 90s, there were people. Did people give you a hard time for the jewelry and all the razzmatazz that you brought?
I got hit 50 times in 20 years. So not too many people wanted to throw at me because I was a physical player and I was intimidating. And I had a situation when I was with Oakland. McGuire got hit about 3 or 4 times in a week. And I pulled him to the side and I said, if you want to stop that, just run out there one day and grab a guy in the collar and shake him for a second. And he did that and didn't get hit for the rest of the year. So, you know, guys want to put on a show or have some added pizzazz to their game, be prepared to pay the price. Bob Gibson would have probably done broke about 12 or 13 ribs by now. I see these guys go up the line throwing bats. I'm looking for one to do a flip. You know, it's a certain respect that's in baseball. You got to have it.
Yeah, and we're talking with the great Dave Parker. Obviously, he's got a book out, and we're going to talk more about that in a couple of minutes here. Cobra, A Life of Baseball and Brotherhood. It's available wherever you get books, Amazon, Walmart, Barnes & Noble, all those locations where you would get your books, and we'll talk more about that. But, Dave, you mentioned the on-field justice when you played and you would get drilled, and then they didn't do that too often because you were a big hulking guy and you could rip their heads off. But baseball's tried to get away from that now. It's another one of those things that's changed since you played where they don't really want the players to take care of the adjudication on the field. And, you know, what were the rules, I guess, the unspoken rules when you were playing that – you guys followed to police the game when you were playing?
Well, we went 9-4-9, 2-4-2. You hit one of mine, I'm going to hit two of yours. You know, that's the way that a lot of guys dealt with it. But, I mean, if you show enough respect, you know, I had a home run trot where I had my fingers down and I ran real slow. But it was done in a respectful way. And I don't think guys were offended by it. Matter of fact, guys took pride in being taken deep. One of my best friends, Dennis Eckersley, I got him about 6 or 7 times. And he'd come and tell you a story about what he thought when it was going over the fence. You know, it's a certain way that you can do that without showing up the player.
Yeah. Well, now, you know, obviously we live in the social media age, Dave. Everything's about Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all that stuff. How would a young Dave Parker, when you were just mashing the baseball with the Pirates, how would you have been on social media in your prime?
I would have been accepted because I had a little pizzazz working. I used to make up rhymes and tell, you know, when the leaves turn brown, I'd be wearing the batting crown. And I had another one that I used on Sundays was, there's only 3 things for sure today. The sun's going to shine, the wind's going to blow, and Big Dave's going to go 4-for-4.
you were like the poet laureate. Didn't you? I was talking to one of my buddies, and we were talking about you back in the day. And then you have wasn't there some line you had like, mommy said there would be Daves like this, right? I mean, you were a poet in your day, Dave, with we were imperfect for Twitter. Would have been perfect.
Yeah, well, they called me the Ali of baseball. That one about mama said there'd be days like this was when me and Winfield was playing together in Anaheim. So I just put together things that fit the club, that fit the individual.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Ben Maller Show weekdays at 2 a.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Pacific. Be sure to catch live editions of the Ben Maller Show weekdays at 2 a.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Dave, what do you miss most about the game nowadays? I mean, obviously there's a change in sabermetrics and analytics and things like that, but what do you miss about what it was compared to what it is now?
Just the guys that are not fundamentally sound. You know, you're making $300 million a year, which I believe in whatever the market will bear. But, you know, you owe the gang some play. You know, you got to be fundamentally sound at least. You know, hustle a little bit, lean your feet. You know, you don't see that. And for the money that they're getting paid, you can request some of that and maybe get it.
Any guys that play today that remind you of how the game was played back in the day?
I like Tatis. I think that's the kid's name, San Diego. I like his style. You know, he puts himself on the line, and he's got flash, and he hustles. He put the team on his back. And we don't have too many players that's capable of doing that today.
I mean, he's certainly a figure in San Diego. What about in Anaheim with Shohei Ohtani? What do you think about him?
I don't know that much about him.
Fair enough. You know, Dave, with the way that things have been progressing with Major League Baseball, you mentioned a guy like Fernando Tatis Jr. and marketing the game. What kind of steps would you take to get these guys out there? I mean, Mike Trout, for all intents and purposes, is the best player in Major League Baseball right now, but doesn't have the personality, doesn't have the charisma, and you can't force the guy. So who else would you go up there with and say, hey, we need to market you a little bit more outside of a guy like Tatis or maybe Mookie Betts?
Well, I'm sure each team has got more than one star. So, you know, you tell you as a manager, you go to your stars and tell them what you expect. And they should be able to do that with no problem at all.
Yeah, Dave, your book, let's talk about that now, the Cobra, that's why you're here, Cobra, A Life of Baseball and Brotherhood, as we mentioned, it's available now wherever you get your books. It just came out here in the month of April, so it's a brand new book, so you can be one of the first people to check it out. I know for guys like me, listen, I grew up watching you play, Dave. I want to hear all about you and read all about you, and I've actually read some of the book already. But for the person listening, let's say the younger person, the Gen Z person that doesn't know Dave Parker, that didn't watch you play with the swagger back in your day, why should someone who's in that category buy this book, Dave?
Well, they probably heard of me if I hadn't seen me play. And it'll be an individual that have a quest for the game, somebody that played hard. I never ran out. I always ran out my ground balls regardless of where they was hit. And I always played at 100%. I was physical. I was colorful. I was fun to watch.
No, you were, and I understand this book is geared more towards an adult audience, Dave. Right? You as you mentioned, I mean, you played in a wild era before social media, when you could, you know, guys could get away with more stuff back in the 70s and the 80s. So how saucy do we get in this book? Are we going to hear about the partying and all that? You know, back in the pirate days and whatnot. How deep do we get in this book, Dave?
It gets pretty deep. I tell people, you know, some curse words in here, you might not want your kid to read it, you know, but it gets pretty deep. I was one of the guys that wouldn't miss a good party and would congregate with my teammates. We'd go out to dinner, and be 12 or 13 of us, and we'd go to a nightclub afterwards. So we did all the fun stuff, too.
Yeah, so and baseball in those days, I mean, they've attempted to, I guess, clean it up and all that. But you played, as I said, in the 70s, and there's stories about greenies and whatnot in the locker room and just the wildness and the parts. And then you played into the 80s and the, you know, some of the beginning of the steroid era. Did you ever dabble in that day when you were playing, or did you avoid that? You played with the A's, and McGuire and Canseco were there. So how tempting was it if you didn't do it?
No, that wasn't tempting at all. You know, steroids shrink the human body, and I'm not one to try to shrink. I'm trying to add on. So steroids never did attract me.
Absolutely. You told an interesting story. You were on with my buddy Sports with Coleman, and I had not heard this. I've always known you have one of the great nicknames in sports, the Cobra. And what is the origin of that? For the guys listening that haven't heard you tell the story before, who gave you the nickname? And it's a great nickname, one of the greats in sports, but who gave you the nickname the Cobra?
Our trainer, Tony Bordarone, was a big boxing fan. And we had a fighter in Cincinnati called the Cincinnati Cobra. His name was Ezra Charles, and he was the heavyweight champ. And Tony associated me being Cincinnati and gave me the title of the Cobra. And Bob Prince made it famous, our announcer. So it came from a trainer.
It's a good nickname. That trainer, whoever that is, that guy, good job by him. I saw in the book here, there's a quote from Keith Hernandez, who played it against you and now is a Mets broadcaster. And he said of you that for that period of time, he meaning you, Dave Parker, the greatest player of my generation. That's a tremendous compliment by Keith Hernandez. Yeah. And I mean, you were wonderful, Dave. I mean, where do you put yourself, Dave, in that 70s, early 80s window?
I was the best player from mid 70s to 80. And from 84 to me coming out of Oakland, it was Milwaukee. I was the best player for about 10 of those years.
Dave, statistically speaking, your 85 campaign with Cincinnati, you had 34 home runs, drove in 125, and batted over 300, 312. That says a lot, obviously, in the middle of your career, but where did you find, I guess, the most comfort in your career? Did you enjoy Pittsburgh more than Cincinnati or Milwaukee or Oakland?
Well, I enjoyed Pittsburgh because they gave me the opportunity to play. And Starter was like a father, a big brother. Doc Ellis was like a brother. And we just had guys, Bill Madlock, guys that was great guys to play with. And organization was great to play for at that time. But I kind of overstayed my welcome. And ran into some problems with the fans for a period of time.
Did you get that sense that you were overstaying your welcome, or is that something that was hinted by somebody else?
No, it's just when your fans start throwing stuff and yelling stuff from the fans, I mean from the stands, it gets to the point where maybe it's time to do something else.
Dave, what were they throwing at you? What was the craziest thing they got thrown at you when you were playing? In that era, that happened a lot, right? I mean, what kind of projectiles were flying down when you were out in the field?
Well, we had one of the strangest things was a sock full of nuts and bolts. It was a sock that had nuts and bolts in it.
Wow.
And somebody threw it out the right field. And I heard a chink, and I went to see what it was, and that's what it was. Some nuts and bolts.
So was it worse in Pittsburgh or worse in Philadelphia?
It was in Pittsburgh. Philadelphia threw a battery at me, and somebody in Pittsburgh threw a battery. So I had two batteries and a sock full of nuts and bolts.
Holy shit.
That's crazy, Dave. What about the Hall of Fame? Obviously, you didn't get voted in by the writers. You're still eligible through the Veterans Committee. Do you think you've been ostracized, Dave, because of some of the stuff that happened in Pittsburgh where they just won't put you in? I mean, your numbers, as you said, you for a period of years were the top player in baseball. You won an MVP award. Like, to me, the criteria for a Hall of Famer, you meet the criteria. You were an MVP. I'm not sucking up you, Dave, but you were. You're a seven-time All-Star. You won the World Series a couple of times. Really bookended, right? 10 years apart, I think it was, you won the World Series. So what do you think it is, Dave? What do you think is going on here where you could not curry enough support to get into Cooperstown?
We had to ask the committee of the Hall of Fame because you couldn't do no more than I did. And if there's a guy drives better than me in the Hall of Fame, you know, I'd like to see him match the numbers and get somebody to tell me that he's better than me, because I know I was the best player in baseball for about 10 of those 20 years I was in ball.
Yeah, I was going to say, with what Ben brought up, Dave, I mean, Curt Schilling is a guy that we bring up, it feels like, annually right now. And the biggest reason for that is because there's thoughts that he is getting blackballed by the writers because of his political allegiance. Do you think a guy like that has hurt himself from getting into the Hall of Fame because of how outspoken he is, and it kind of goes away from the writers?
Well, you can't get away from your personality. That's his personality. Curt loved to put himself on the line. Before I even knew him, he was writing messages on balls and rolling them across Philadelphia's ballpark to the bat boy and sending me messages, and I never faced the kid.
Wait, what kind of messages?
Just stuff. I watch you play. I can't wait to get you out. You know, stuff like that.
Wow.
That's crazy. Yeah, so what about, let's go back to, I mean, the dark period. I'm sure you mentioned this in the book here, the Pittsburgh days, and there was that famous incident, the drug trials that took place. What was that like going through that? How scared were you? How nervous were you? And kind of paint the picture for those that don't recall, like, you know, that whole era and what that was like going through as you know, being a star player in baseball and being dragged into a courtroom.
Well, it was after the big name players, you know, that was what they were seeking, and they changed their direction and gave us immunity, and they had the big trial in '85. I did no more than anybody else that did during that time. You had lawyers doing it, teachers, other athletes, general managers. Just everybody in society was doing it. I thought it was a fad. You know, I thought it would go away after a few years, but it grabbed hold to a lot of players, and they couldn't handle it, and it led to them having some problems.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, I want to circle back to the money thing, and you were the first $1 million-a-year guy, right? I remember that story when you got the big contract. And to think, like, people were upset with you, Dave, right? Because you were the $1 million guy. And now, as we talked about, Mike Trout's got a $400 million deal. Mookie Betts is at $360 million. So what I want to ask you here is, and I know you're a very confident man, Dave Parker, but if you were playing today, if a prime MVP vintage Dave Parker was playing today, how much money would you get on your contract? Would you be at 300, 400? Where would you be, Dave Parker?
I'm going to pick out a nice city. I love San Diego. I own San Diego.
How big a contract are we talking about for you? If you could transport what you were in, you know, 1978, 79, that era, and then, you know, how much money would you be getting right now?
If somebody's making four, I got to make five.
I like it. There you go. See that? You got to go higher than Mike Trout. Mike's making $430 million on the contract. So you got to go higher than that. You played with the Cincinnati Reds. Pete Rose was a teammate. He was your manager in Cincinnati there also for a few years. What was he like? I mean, we've heard stories about Pete. You competed against him for a long period of your career. You played with him. What was Pete Rose like behind the scenes?
It was what you see is what you get. You know, Pete did everything like Charlie Hustle. And the way he run the first base was just vintage Pete Rose. I enjoyed playing against him. And it was even a bigger thrill playing with him, because I watched him every day in his latter years play the game the same way he did when he first got to the big leagues. So he was a thrill to play with.
Dave, who was the toughest pitcher you went up against?
Steve Carlton. He had a slider that he started at the middle of the plate out, and it would break over in the other batter's box. And he punched me out about three times a game. But we had a funny stat going. Steve struck me out more than any pitcher I ever faced, and I hit more home runs off of him than any pitcher I ever faced. So that's a weird stat.
Hey, at least it's not one-dimensional like it was with Greg Maddux and Tony Gwynn back in the day.
Yeah, absolutely.
Rick, I was surprised that he was so great because he had medium velocity, and he came up with the fastball that he could run back over the plate. When I got in the American League and I kept looking at the standings, and he would be knocking off 20 wins, ERA is almost zero. He turned out to be one of the greatest pitchers of all time.
Hey, Dave, you mentioned you were obviously known as a guy that enjoyed a good party, and you played in a great era for that. Who was the teammate that you were with that could match you party for party? Who was the wildest party animal teammate that you had back in those days?
Doc Ellis was a flamboyant guy and a ladies' man. Doc was the guy that could run with me.
And did he – now, the famous story about Doc Ellis is that he supposedly pitched – he was on LSD or something like that. He pitched a no-hitter.
That's what he'd say. There's stories about that. He said he wasn't aware of him pitching a no-hitter into the seventh inning.
Wow.
But he said it's true. He got the no-hitter.
That's pretty crazy. Dropping some acid, throwing a no-hitter. That's right up there. That's right up there.
Well, Dave, one of the greatest things he did, I think, is Cincinnati had knocked us out of the playoffs like 2 years in a row. And Doc came, he was going to start the season. And he said, you guys scared of the Reds. And he said, I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to hit everybody come to the plate. And I said, oh, you ain't going to do nothing. He said, I'm hitting everybody come to the plate. Well, he hit everybody came to the plate. They took him out and against Tony Perez and was hitting fifth that day. But he hit the first hitter, the second hitter, the third hitter, the fourth hitter, and missed the fifth hitter. And that was Johnny Bench. But he's a man of his word.
There you go. You see, you say you're going to do something, Dave. You got to do it. I'm talking about Gascon over here, not you, Dave, but very important. Now, meanwhile, you played at the end, near the end of your career with the A's, some tremendous teams talent-wise in Oakland. You guys won a championship. But Tony La Russa was your manager, and he's back. Dave, he's managing the Chicago White Sox now. When you saw that, like, what were you thinking? Like, I mean, what went through your mind when you saw Tony La Russa returning to baseball at his at his age? He's been out for a while managing the White Sox.
Well, he's a good manager. He could handle that. I don't think he'd be putting any pressure on him because he's done one, maybe three World Series, and he's the most prepared manager I ever played for because he dots every I, crosses every T. So, he even been qualified to have a good team like the White Sox.
Yeah. You've been very open, Dave. I'm going to kind of wrap this up a little bit, but you've got the book out again, and you go into great detail about your day. It's designed more for an adult audience because there's some language and whatnot. If you're the kids today, though, they speak all kinds of language. But Cobra, A Life of Baseball and Brotherhood, and you've been very open about your health, Dave. I mean, your fight against Parkinson's, and how is your health today? How are you doing these days?
I'm doing decent. I have good days, bad days, and some days you go out and you feel like you do normally, and other days you go out and your legs ain't working properly. You're just not moving as fluent as I should. But I got to play the hand that's dealt. You know, this is what I got to deal with. This is what I'm dealing with.
Yeah, and I heard the story. You were just going for your regular physical, and then you didn't realize you had this, right? And then the doctor kind of noticed there was something off a little bit, and that's how you found out. Is that correct?
Right. I had my hand was trembling. I didn't even notice it until he pointed it out to my attention. And he said, it looked like you might have a little touch of Parkinson. And that's how I found out.
Interesting. But and, go ahead.
I dealt with it in the early stages. I thought I was going to beat it. But Parkinson's done altered my life and changed everything, slowed everything down. So it's just something that I got my foundation where I'm raising money for research. And that's been basically what I've been doing is trying to raise some money for research to see if we can bite this thing in the butt.
Absolutely. That's a great cause. In fact, a bad job by me, Dave. I was promoting Amazon and Walmart and all that. But if you buy the book from, and I think this is still going on, Dave. I read this on your website, DaveParker39Foundation.com is the website. So if you're interested in buying this book, you should go to DaveParker39Foundation.com because according to what I read here, Dave, every copy sold via that website, your website there, benefits the Dave Parker 39 Foundation and your mission to help defeat Parkinson's. And again, the name of the book, Cobra, A Life of Baseball and Brotherhood. It just came out here at the beginning of April, so it's a fresh book. And if you're like me and you appreciated Dave Parker playing for the Pirates and the Reds, and I saw you at the end with the Angels when I was a young pup going out watching you in Winfield with the Angels there. And I loved the sledgehammer that you had in the on deck circle. That was my favorite. As a kid, I was like, I can't believe it. This guy's like a superhero. He's swinging a sledgehammer in the on deck circle. It was awesome. And love it. And listen, continue to, good health to you. Keep fighting the fight there. Good luck with the book. And we thank you for spending some time with us. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you. Thanks for promoting the book.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Ben Maller Show weekdays at 2 a.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Pacific. Be sure to catch live editions of the Ben Maller Show weekdays at 2 a.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.